All right, guys, welcome to Property Profits Podcast. I'm your host, Bryce Kaminsky, filling in for the fearless Dave Dubow. And if you've ever wondered how a former railroader seamlessly transitioned into helping manage over 500 doors in real estate, today, my guest, Kenny Clark, he's going to let us in on his remarkable journey into the real estate thing here. So welcome to the show, Kenny. How are you?
Hey, thanks, Bryce. Thanks for the welcome. I'm doing pretty good. Just after the first of the month, so dealing with all the move-ins and move-outs here. Pretty busy week, but I enjoy it. So,
yeah, for the people at home, Kenny is getting. You need to be licensed when you start dealing with managing on that scale. You know, if you're managing your own thing, there's rules for that. But if you're managing a bunch of other things. For the people on the video, can you show us the textbook that you're digging through? Do you still got it kicking around there?
Yeah, I do. I got. I'm using my phone as the webcam, so it's a bit better. But yeah,
oh,
big book
there's
here.
Yeah, for people listening at home, it's a little more of a Bible. So,
yeah,
you know, professional management is a career and takes dedication and knowledge to do properly. You know, the difference between good property management and bad property management is usually their ability to navigate the system. So first of the month's rolled through, collect some rents. How did you get into property management? You know, former railroader. Yeah. Tell us about how you transitioned and, you know, how that came to be.
Yeah. So it's right out of high school. Basically I was 19, started working at the railway. I liked it. Wasn't a huge fan of the environment. Closer to, I'd say 2019, 2020, I got a couple bugs in my ears about real estate. So I started researching a bit, getting into it. Then I found out I had some medical concerns that I wasn't allowed to be active, like driving locomotives anymore.
Okay.
So I got pulled, went on disability, and I was actually having troubles filling one of my own rentals at the time. So I reached out to the company, the brokerage I work at now, and looking at pricing and stuff, and ended up actually getting my own tenant. Turned out to, I probably should have went with the property manager, because that was a bad lesson. It was a drug dealer I ended up putting in there. From a friend referral, of course.
Finessed his way into your rental, eh?
Yeah, yeah. I'd already been talking with the owner and the property manager at the brokerage. And I was also off work. They pretty much told me to go find other work until my medical stuff clears up. And it's just seizures. We're still kind of trying to figure that out. I started bugging him for a job. Got an interview after a couple months of pestering him, and he'd been watching my Facebook too. So he actually knew who I was. And I'm like, well, you know what? I want to get into real estate. He's basically the only local person I know that's involved. We had an interview, we went out to lunch, and we talked for like 2.5 hours. It was probably the best interview I've ever had. And yeah, I've been here since beginning of 2021, about 3 years. I'm now I gotta be careful how I say this. I'm the manager of the office. I'm not the managing broker. So I basically help oversee a lot of the day-to-day stuff. If there's issues that come up that I can deal with, I do. And I work under my property manager. So like our brokerage in total manages about 800, about 500 to 600 that we see over that are kind of in our jurisdiction. And just overseeing it all, working under him. I've learned a lot. He's it's been great working for him. It's complete opposite as the railway. You know, I was used to coming up with an idea and getting yelled at about it. And now I come up with an idea, it's thought through, it's implemented, and you know, I'm appreciated. Going through, like you said, studying, I can write the exam, I think in like a few weeks, but I still got a lot of studying to do. So.
Yeah. Well, it's good that the industry has become more standardized and kind of systematized, because property management used to be a thing that people just like put a hat on, and now they're the property manager. So have you found it, you know, you've been doing it for 3 years, moving towards, I guess, be finally getting that same designation as your I guess your partner, your boss.
So that's my plan, is to become a licensed property manager. At that point, when I was first kind of brought into the brokerage, Blake, my boss, he kind of said that he wanted me to be like an extension of himself. So when I am licensed, it's been taking a long time. So sorry, Blake, if you're watching this. When I am licensed, I'm basically gunning for his position. He's the owner, so obviously I won't be the owner, but for him to basically delegate, be able to step back, I take over. I'll be able to hire some people underneath of me, and kind of run like that. And like, he's pretty similar, he's pretty goal oriented as well. So I know he doesn't want to do this forever. I don't, but in the meantime, I mean, it's awesome. I like the people I work with. It's rewarding. Not always, you know, when we have to deal with evictions and stuff, people love to yell and blame us for homelessness, which won't get into, but
Well, you
yeah.
know, it is certainly part of the business of property management. And why don't you speak to that for a second, to all the self-managing people? What are some pro tips for dealing with evictions?
Get your ducks in order. So I'm actually working through creating like a video course for landlords. It's going pretty slow because there's so much regulations here, and I've pivoted away from just BC. But you know, do a move-in inspection. Don't take a video. Get something documented in writing, room by room, walls, floors, ceilings, light fixtures, trim, condition, if it's scuffed, if it's not. Have them sign that. At least here, like, we're super regulated, and I'm not sure about, you know, other states or provinces, but the foundations that we have to do to properly, you know, be successful here, I think they should be implemented everywhere. So you have that move-in inspection, you have your lease, you have your addendum, so you're protected. When you move them in, you do some inspections. You know, I am a very lax landlord for my own rentals. So, you know, I'll go in after 6 months, I'll do an inspection. If everything's all good, then, you know, I won't keep bugging them. I'll do some more. And then when you move out, make sure that you, or when they move out, make sure you know the laws in your area. So if we don't return the deposits within 15 days of getting a forwarding address, or we dispute and try and claim those, they can be awarded twice their damage deposit. So you got to be very careful, at least here. And you know, if you're elsewhere, just make sure you document everything, your inspections, your leases, and talk to property managers, talk to other landlords, join groups, see what addendums they have, and don't be overbearing because you're going to create a bad tenancy. But you know, protect yourself.
Yeah, because one of the big things, especially, is like, when I think about property management, I think a lot about how my lawyer typically helps me out, because I'm really like gung ho. I'm like, yeah, this is going to be the best deal. Let's write it up and get it to the lawyer's office. And if it's like some sort of creative deal, the first thing that I hear, he'll call me up and he'll say, yeah, this is great, but what happens if it doesn't go well? And so get this, that, and the other in writing and figure out the worst case scenarios, and then get all the paperwork to support the exit of the worst case scenario, not just the best case scenario. Because I find too that when you're renting, especially as self-managing, you always hear the story of like, I thought it was going to be good. I put this person in and they seemed really, really good. And we didn't even do a like a walkthrough inspection. I just kind of, they gave me the money. It was cash in hand and they just handed over the keys, and then I couldn't get my unit back for 9 months, and they only paid for three. So that's a story that happens.
All the
But the
time.
recourse in the system is really hard to go to without the proper instantiation documents. Like, if you didn't do a proper early inspection, you didn't get a lease, you didn't get this, you didn't get that, it was all handshakes and smiles. When you're not smiling anymore, it's gonna be really hard to like process that eviction. It's gonna be really hard to claim this and claim that, because you don't have enough evidence to support you because you were smiling all the way in. So with what you guys do, it's a huge system then.
Oh,
in and
yeah.
out,
Yeah.
lots of standard operating procedures for the new people and the people placing. How many people do you manage as part of the office management?
So in our office, there's the two property managers, their husband and wife, they're the owners. There's a realtor, but he was the original owner of the company, so he works remotely. I don't manage him or anything like that. There's three other unlicensed assistants that essentially do what I do. Technically four, but the fourth, she works more like admin and stuff. So she's not really doing anything like we're doing. She's not had like she helps with the paperwork, but she's not out in the field.
Showing
So
units and, getting
yeah, and
keys.
she helps the accounting team a lot, which is something that I don't really know a lot of, so I don't really even have to bother. She knows what she's doing. She's good. Well, everyone here does.
Yeah, so it takes a certain number of people to manage that many units. I remember a lot of places that I looked at to rent when I was down in the States. They have these like middle renting offices surrounded by the apartment complex itself. So it does certainly take a team to manage that many doors. Let's shift the focus a bit and like what does your portfolio look like? You started investing while still being in the real world?
Yeah. So, I guess a little bit of background. I didn't, think I was, I thought I was either going to be dead because I was, I had a lot of depression growing up, or I'd be in jail by the age of 25. Prior to the railway, I was not a very good person. Like I didn't steal or anything. I just made money illegally. Don't need to get into too much detail here. But I always had this pipe dream. I'm gonna tell people that by the time I'm 25, I'm going to buy my own house. When I'm 20, I'm gonna buy my own car. By 30, I'm gonna have a family. I'm gonna have that white picket fence dream. And it was more to keep people off of my back. And when I was working at the railway, like I started when I was 19. So I think I bought my first car when I was like 20, my first new car. I bought it off the lot. I bought my first house when I was 23. And then with that, I was looking for, I was, I'm cheap. I don't want to waste money on a bunch of stuff. So I was looking for something with a suite. I was looking for something with a couple extra bedrooms so I could rent to a friend. I didn't really know about real estate investing. But I know I didn't really want to pay my own bills for the house that would be my dream. By the time I was 27, one of my roommates, she became my girlfriend, who became my baby mama, and now we've been together for like 5, 6 years. And I took a step back and I looked at everything. I'm like, okay, well, I got my big three dreams that I didn't think I'd even be alive to see, and I wasn't even trying. So I'm here. I'm still working at a job I'm not happy with. And this is supposed to be my dream. I'm like, if I got here without even trying, imagine how far I could get if I put a little bit of effort into it. How far I could get, if I had a lot of effort. So that kind of really got me started looking into real estate. It was actually an advertisement. Step back. I took a step back from the railway, on the floor, and I became like a tools attendant because trying to get away from that environment and kind of be in my own space. So I had a lot of time to watch videos, play games on my phone, and it turned into real estate. I seen an advertising. I don't know why I watched it. It was just like a 1 minute ad. And at the very end of it, he's like, "And you can use equity to buy that house." I'm like, "Wait a second, I can use my equity for not retirement, or painting my walls, or upgrading my house." Like, I didn't know about that. But I started looking into it, started pestering people like Dave, and I didn't realize how rude I was being, trying to steal their time essentially. But ended up making some great connections, and I'm looking for my second house. I got some money I can refinance, and I'm told none. Okay, you're approved for zero, even from my bank. I'm like, okay, well, I got all this equity. I can do more than a 5% down payment, which is what we can do up here if you're moving into it. Or actually, that's not true. It's just mortgage insurance. So you can do it up to, I think, three or four houses. That's what it used to. And my mentor at the time, he's like, I tell him, like, well, they said no. And they're like, okay, well, so? Like, well, what do you mean? He's like, well, why are you taking no as an answer? I'm like, well, I don't know, man. Like the house I want
They're
is
the
almost
bank,
four.
right? They're the bank.
Yeah,
They
like
should
almost
know
want
if I am or not.
400,000 here.
Yeah.
And I spoke to a broker and I'm like, hey, I want to use equity. And initially I was approved for I think like 203,000, which was 40,000 less than when I bought my other house. And she's like, well, you know what? Find the house and come to me. And it's 367,000. Or no, it came down to 367,000 after a 30,000 down payment. I got approved, and it was a miracle. And it was actually the family house. My grandparents died about 6 months after or before that, and it'd been sitting on the market for 3 months, and I couldn't find a way to buy it. I couldn't afford it. And then finally, this guy's, well, just don't take no for an answer. And so now my daughter's growing up in the same house I grew up in. And like I got like measurements from when I was a kid that I can measure. I'm actually getting a little bit emotional here, but yeah, I can actually measure her against my own measurements from 1996, and I think she's gonna be taller than me because she wasn't the same age.
Yeah, you can
And
tell by how tall they are when they're two, right? And then you can
yeah,
double it up because
and
they're gonna be
really,
taller than you.
it was just taking advice from people who gave me advice and were in a position to give that advice. And now I've been saying yes to a lot more, and life's been getting a lot better, and I'm not listening to the people who aren't where I want to be, because that's how I got all those no's.
Well, I like the thing too is like a lot of people stop at that A lender mortgage. They're like, oh, I can't get into a house. And then you call a broker and they'll exercise all the B's and C's. And even I've seen my broker put together some what I would call like a crazy like D loan, like put down 9 grand and this guy will do something and will give you a money back on close, but you're going to increase the mortgage and all this weird stuff like no money down housing. And yeah, like if you're listening out there and you got shut down by the big banks, which is a lot of people right now, don't give up. Call the B lender, call a broker, don't go to the bank. Or this is another piece of advice I've picked up from all the different podcasts that I've been doing lately. Whatever like province or state you're in, there's a credit union, whether it's like Iowa Credit Union or the local Iowa Bank of Iowa.
They'll fight
They're
for your
more
business.
interested. Yeah, they're more interested than the Wells Fargos or the Royal Banks of the world. So, if you got shut down by the Big Five here in Canada or the whatever number it is in the States, go to the B lender and see if they'll take your business because they have a certain mandate to support the local market. So
I
you got
never
some
thought about.
properties. Yeah, you got some properties going on now. I like what you said too about the fact that I've been making my way without trying or working too hard at it, and I'm hitting these markers. What happens if I like put some effort into it, right? And so that's an interesting thing because I think some of us end up coasting. Myself, I like coasted through school and stuff like that. It wasn't hard to get decent grades,
Yeah,
but I
I
do
didn't get much of it.
remember, I do remember one semester I'm like, I'm gonna try, and then I got better grades. So putting a little effort into something that comes naturally can really like scale things up for you. So what do you think your unfair advantage is? What comes easy to you that other people might find difficult to do?
Maybe like I'm outgoing, I guess. So stepping into a room of people and going and shaking hands, I'm nervous about it. I get anxiety. I've learned how to conquer that, so I don't actually have to take medication for anxiety anymore. But just being able to start those conversations, put yourself out there, a little bit of humility goes a long way. Yeah, like I don't come from money. My mom, I guess I could say my mom might be an unfair advantage. She has saved my butt a few times. When that tenant that was a drug dealer, I had to evict him, and I was taken off work around the same time. I could not afford my mortgages. So my whole family, me, my wife, my girlfriend, sorry, my daughter, we moved into her basement, and wasn't the greatest year, but then she saved me a couple times. I repaid her, and like I wholesaled a deal and cut her a check for $15,000. So I'm like, that was just rewarding. Other than that, like it's a struggle. I'm grinding right now, like you said, kind of coasting. I felt like I was doing that the past year. My birthday was in April, and I was very in not a good spot. I just about committed suicide. I wouldn't say I almost committed it. It was just a thought that would not leave my head for a couple months daily. Because of my mom, my daughter, my girlfriend, I could never do that. So it was just felt horrible being alive, I guess, to deal with those thoughts, even though everything else was going all right or well. And now I'd say the last 2 months I found out what was causing that. I removed it from my life, and I haven't had any issues in the last few months. It's not even a crossing thought. I realized that I feed off people's energy, and when I'm around, they say you are the five people you surround yourself with.
And the books
Holy,
you
is that
read.
true? So, now just getting out there and really trying to pick back up after a year of being down. A little
Well,
off topic, but
no, I mean that's what we're here. One of the questions I was going to ask you is, what's your big, with all you've accomplished, what's your biggest obstacle? But we already hopped over that obstacle. Congratulations, man. It's mental health is a serious and sometimes uncomfortable thing to talk about. So, good on you for having the courage to talk about it. So, let's
Thanks,
talk
man.
about particularly with finding deals. Like, you're buying this house, you bought that house. You're obviously looking to expand your own portfolio because that's, the wealth factor. When you're looking for deals, are you typically like a find the deal and then go figure out the money, or do you prefer to have the money kind of lined up, the capital, and then go looking for a deal?
That's a good point. It's always a good question. It's always been money first, deal after, until I kind of opened my eyes up to the real estate investing world. Now I'm realizing that that's backwards, and I couldn't get my second house that way. I had to work backwards. I found the house, and the mortgage broker, we helped make it happen. Kind of have a mind blank here, sorry.
Well, it's just, it is nice to have the capital kind of put together, but it is, there's something interesting about the deal. Like, when you find the deal, it motivates you to find the money. But when there's no like deals, there's this common conception that, well, even if I go and raise the money, like, what am I going to do with it? Like, where am I going to put it? And so, the deal for me really motivates me to like put it all together. It gets me excited. I guess there's a dopamine thing in there, and I'm like, yeah, time to go do the deal or get it to someone. A lot of times, if I don't have the capital lined up, I'll just wholesale the thing and, make a short money, and someone else who has the capital lined up, they can go and do their thing and fix it up. So, if people want to find out more about you, they want to connect with you, what should they do? How do they find you?
Yeah, you can find me at Facebook. Pretty sure it's Kenny Clark RE. Just at the end of the Facebook link. I post a lot on there. I have a Facebook group, North American Real Estate Investors, where I post most of my real estate content. Mostly on Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn, a little bit on Instagram, TikTok, but you can all find it through my Facebook there. And reach out to me. Don't be a stranger. If you got questions, having issues with tenants, not sure how to deal with it, I love helping people. Might have to send me a couple messages before I see it, but I'd love to help people. I'm not going to charge you. I don't coach people or anything, so I won't pitch you.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate it. I think people listening along, watching along, are going to enjoy the journey here that we just took here. So, really appreciate the time, Kenny.
Yeah. Thanks, Bryce. It was nice chatting with you.
Yeah, no problem. And until next time, guys, we'll catch you on the next episode.